14, when the Indonesian, Nasurin, fell sick in the forest. After a rainstorm, he complained of a fever and remained ill for 2 weeks. Arnell and Tony suspected malaria. "He said the inside of his body felt very hot," Tony recalled. Pirates threw drugs at Nasurin, acetaminophen, antibiotics, but the young Indonesian died in their outdoor camp in May of 2014. "No medical treatment," Tony said with a look of disgust. So two human bodies, Nasurin's and the captain's, were lying in the freezer when the Naham 3 gave out. I asked what the pirates had done with the contents of the hold. "They dumped all the tuna," Arnell said in his high and musical voice. "All of it? 100 tons or so?" I asked. "Yes, all of it," said Tony. "But the other body stayed inside." "You're kidding. The pirates are crazy, Michael." I could imagine the final shudder of the engine, the silence on the water, and the fear among the crew. On their last day at sea, they noticed a warship on the horizon, and some pirates arrived on a skiff, leaving it tethered to the rear of the doomed vessel. After sunset, Jian Zui, the most adventurous Chinese hostage, the sarcastic but good-humored man who'd mimed jumping into the water, pretended to fall ill and slept outside on the work deck. Late at night, he crept back to the skiff. Pirate guards had drifted off, and he wanted to motor out to the distant warship. He slipped over the side and cut the rope with a knife, but a wave knocked the boat away before he could climb in. Jian Zui panicked. He swam for the beach in the blackened water against the tide. To reduce his weight, he stripped naked. When he crawled up on shore, exhausted, thirsty, with a coral-sliced hand, he decided not to grope around in the dark. Instead, he went to sleep. He intended to wake up before dawn, Arnell said, but when he woke up, the sun was shining, Arnell laughed, and he was nude. "What did he do?" I said. "He found dry clothes in an empty pirate skiff and walked a long way inland without water. At last he came to a nomad's hut where he begged for something to eat and drink. A young woman offered him milk and goat. But while he was eating, this woman called Bakaile on the phone," Arnell said, "and Bakaile come in a car." "With a gun," said Tony. So Jian Zui answered a question lingering on the edges of my conscience ever since I had left Somalia. What if I'd escaped on land? Suppose I'd thrown myself at the mercy of strangers in Galmadug. "Bakaile beat him?" I said. "He say only slapped," Arnell answered. But a magazine report from China would later describe a long scar on Jian Zui's scalp from the butt of Bakaile's rifle. I never saw Jian Zui in Nairobi. I could only guess at his condition. From proof of life pictures taken in the bush, I thought he looked no worse than the others. These Asian sailors tended not to complain, so in the muted festive atmosphere of the hotel, it was hard to find psychological wounds. But I recognized the long silences, the gaunt faces, the frozen anger and pent-up sorrow, and I could guess how long it would take them to recover. When I came out of Somalia, I had no tolerance for the broad, ambitious tendency of the mind to dream up ideas and distant plans. I lived in a brutal animal survival mode, and I had to let myself recover. Body and mind know how to do that, and they revive one fiber at a time. Animal survival is also not opposed to the dreaming world of ideas. We inhabit both selves at once, at the very least, but I mistrusted big ideas and distant plans for a long time. Ideas had gotten me into trouble. Ideas could easily go wrong. Even in Nairobi, more than 2 years after my release, I was wary of long-term plans. But I also had a glimpse of something I find both irresistible and hard to describe. I couldn't speak Tagalog or Ilocano, the Filipinos' main languages, and their English had rusted in Somalia. We had the old problem of finding the right words. I thought about the way Raleigh and I had used okay as a stand-in for whole libraries of mutual language. It was a deep pleasure to see the crew again on the balcony of a sun-drenched Nairobi hotel, to watch them eat well and drink decent coffee. But the obstacles to recovery from men who have been captive for so long made it painful, too. And there was no contradiction, no cancellation of one extreme by the other, bleakness by joy or vice versa. The opposites intensified each other. When I thought about my own swim in the black ocean off the Naham 3, I saw that disentangling the exhilaration of those moments of freedom from their lingering horror was impossible. Absolutely no way. And when the men talked about returning to rural jobs in Vietnam or Cambodia or the Philippines, the tattooed Buddhist, Fumani, mentioned selling hot chilies from his parents' farm, I sensed the ragged uncertainty of the future, blended with elation that we had one at all. Juan Zui tried to escape like you, Tony said with a grin. Yes, but, oh, good grief. He's okay now, I said. Arnell nodded and smiled. Yes, he said. He's okay. Later, we celebrated at the Philippine Embassy in Nairobi. A church service, a buffet dinner, karaoke. We spoke ship's pigeon to one another, and it felt awkward to use such a stunted language on land in an almost formal setting. Of course, I wouldn't have missed it for anything. I'd lived on a thermal of happiness ever since the news of the men's release, and the world felt ordered again, at least for a while. I sensed that core of inane excitement, the irrational body of delight I had gleaned in Galkayo, which pointed toward a durability of the soul that I had found so elusive on the ship. But I lacked the vocabularies to express this idea to anyone at the embassy. I could hardly express my gratitude, or not just gratitude, but also rage, hunger, and horror, the long paralysis of hope. Death, renewal, grief, and love. The parching sun on the desert bush, and the astonishing tonic of the sea. This is Corey Snow. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Desert and the Sea, 977 Days Captive on the Somali Pirate Coast, by Michael Scott Moore. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive Producer, Suzanne Mitchell. Text copyright 2018 by Michael Scott Moore. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.